Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
And thank you all for tuning in. Join P.I. Vance, an amateur detective that uses his high intellect to solve the crimes of New York. In today's episode, the 1948 to 1950 series, based on the character created by S.S. Van Dyne, which was actually a pen name for Willard Huntington Wright, who by day was an art critic and by night was an author. If you enjoy this episode, please let me know in the comments on Spotify or through my email at mysteryfrequencypodcast@gmail.com or my social media, mysteryfreak, F-R-E-Q on Twitter, mysteryfrequency on Instagram, and be sure to check out the other show links in the descriptions. And while you're there, if you enjoy this podcast, please follow, review, and rate. The more ratings I get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast and enjoy these great shows. And with all that, please enjoy.
The makers of Raleigh Cigarettes present John Emery, star of the Broadway success Angel Street, as Philo Vance in S.S. Van Dyne's murder mystery, The Case of the Cellini Cup.
Good evening. I am Philo Vance, occupation criminologist. And tonight I'd like to tell you the adventure of the Cellini Cup. As I pieced this fantastic and incredible story together later, it started something like this. In the East 70s of New York City, deep in the gloomy shadow of the Third Avenue L, is a dingy little second-hand store called the Old World Curio Shop. It's about 10:30 at night. The front of the store is filled with the usual miscellaneous rubbish, but in the back there's a rather a good workshop. There's a light on there. The man is hunched over a workbench repairing the enamel on, of all things, a cloisonné elephant. This man is Paul Getman, about 43, rather heavy set, oily complexion, little pig eye, smug and self-satisfied, but a clever workman. An unpleasant man, but then he hasn't long to live, although he doesn't know that. There's a discreet knock on the door at the front of the shop. He gets up and walks through the store to the door.
Oh, it's you. What do you want? Well? Hey, put that gun down. Someone's liable to get hurt. Wait a minute. Take it easy. What are you going to do? No, you don't dare. You can't get away with it. That's murder. For God's sakes, don't do it. Well, why don't you say something? What are you waiting for? I know what you're waiting for. You're waiting for the elevated train. You're waiting for the elevated train to drown out the shot. When I get back, I'm going to...
Philo Vance will be back in a moment, but first... You know, when a friend of yours gets a new house, you naturally want to go and see it. Well, an old tried and true friend of yours, Raleigh Cigarettes, is living in a brand new house, and you really ought to see it. Because Raleigh's new house protects you by protecting Raleigh's. How? This new house is an exclusive new package, which gives up to 400% more protection than the package on other leading brands. This means that Raleigh Cigarettes come to you factory fresh. Never harsh and bitter, always rich in flavor, and fresh. Smokers, you'll thank me for this if you follow my suggestion. Make your next pack Raleigh's, America's freshest cigarettes. And now, here is Philo Vance to tell you the story of the Cellini Cup.
Thank you, Mr. Shirley. Well, to explain how I got involved in this, John F.X. Markham, the district attorney, is an old friend of mine, and bright and early the morning after Getman was murdered, much too bright and much too early, Markham came over to my apartment and dragged me over to the old world curio shop to view the mortal remains of Paul Getman. Sergeant Heath of the homicide squad met us at the door, a businesslike frown on his broad, pugnacious features, and gestured toward the body.
Well, here he is, shot through the heart. Doc Baker examined the body and pulled a .32 slug out of him. I would have bet my shirt it was a .45. Made a big hole going in.
So it did, Sergeant.
Well, signs of a struggle. Who found the body, Sergeant?
The patrolman on the beat. The burglar alarm went off and he came running. Looks like Getman set it off himself. There's a button right here on the counter, and we found Getman's thumbprint on it.
Look at this, Markham.
What's that, Vance?
This utterly atrocious tie Getman was wearing. Imagine the embarrassment of being caught dead wearing a purple horror like this.
I thought it was kind of snappy.
Sergeant, you distress me. I've never seen you out of your uniform, but I'll wager you're a panic.
Now, Vance, let's not get into a discussion about the well-dressed corpse should wear.
Calm yourself, Markham. Ah, what have we here? A little circular bit of charred cloth. Must be a clue, eh, Sergeant?
I already seen it. I figured whoever came in here to bump Getman off hid the gun under something. Maybe a handkerchief. And when he fired, this piece of cloth was blown off. Figured that out myself. Not bad, huh?
Sergeant, you've been going to night school. Suppose you tell us what you found out about the late Mr. Getman.
Okay, he was in his early 40s. He owned this shop. He did repair work on fancy art objects for the museum and art dealers. And he was pretty good at it, I guess. He had a little apartment at the Windsor Arms, and that's about all. Hey, looks like a customer at the door. That's his second today.
Markham, isn't that George Henry Howard? Yes, it is.
The art collector?
Yes, but there's more of the collector than the artist in him. Before the war, he traveled over Europe sweeping up statues, porcelains, tapestries, and so on like a vacuum cleaner. Between George Henry Howard and William Randolph Hearst, the museums on the continent were left looking a trifle seedy.
Let him in, Sergeant.
Okay. Well, well. Mr. Vance, isn't it?
How are you, Mr. Howard?
Fine, fine. Never better, thanks.
Mr. Markham, our district attorney and champion of justice.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Markham?
And Sergeant Heath.
How are you?
How do you do? Is Mr. Getman here?
Yes, but he's not speaking to anyone.
He was murdered last night, Mr. Howard.
Murdered? Really?
Oh, definitely.
Well, that's too bad. From my standpoint, as well as his, I wanted to buy a group of items in here. Will his death interfere with selling them?
Well, that would depend on whether there were any heirs and so on.
Oh, yes, of course, of course.
Well, there seems to be a few pieces of some value in this case. Let's see, there's the triptych, a cloisonné vase, a copy of the Cellini cup, this beautiful German horizontal clock with hunting scenes in relief, circa 1600, I'd say.
And quite right you are, Mr. Vance. Mm. By the way, Mr. Markham, I'd like to put a deposit of, say, 4,000 on the contents of this case just to ensure my getting it. I'd top any bid by 250. Could I do that?
Well, we'll have to take that up after the investigation is concluded.
All right, fine, Mr. Markham. Thank you very much. If I can be of any help...
Thank you.
Quite all right. Goodbye. Goodbye, Mr. Vance.
Goodbye, Mr. Vance.
Goodbye. 4,000 bucks for that stuff? I could do better at the five and dime.
Yeah, worth about 2,000. Oh, Sergeant, you mentioned another customer.
Oh, yeah, before you got here. A man by the name of Hans Hendricks. An art dealer, he told me.
Oh, yes, the Hans Hendricks Galleries on 57th Street.
Anyway, he came to pick up an art object Getman was repairing for him. He had a receipt for it, so I let him in to make sure it was here. But I didn't let him take it.
Oh, I'll answer. Maybe my office.
Well, what do you think of this, Sergeant?
Oh, I got a theory. When there ain't no clues, I always say what the French say. Cherchez femme. Cherchez femme.
Cherchez femme, eh?
Yeah, in French, it means look for the dame.
Oh, thank you for the translation, Sergeant.
That's okay.
That was the office, Vance. Swacker tells me they got the license number of a car that was seen here last night. Well, now we've got something concrete to work on.
I have nothing very exciting to do this afternoon. Suppose I take this gentleman and scholar, the incredible Sergeant Heath, and the two of us will trace that license number to its lair.
It's like I tell you, Mr. Vance. You don't have to be no genius to solve murders. All you do is ask the right people the right questions.
Providing one can find the right people.
Well, we sure got a lot of information so far. The owner of the car rented it to a guy named Tony Carpini who lives in Queens.
Yes, and this Carpini had a date last night with a girl named Norma Allen who lives in Flushing.
Church A. Femme, huh?
She'll be in Mr. Markham's office tomorrow morning.
I'll pick up Carpini and we'll... Well, we'll ask questions and solve the murder.
You make it sound delightfully simple.
Yeah, it's a cinch. I guess I know how to figure these things out instinctive.
Sergeant, you've been most instructive.
Oh, that's okay.
Well, now, let's get on to the Hans Hendricks galleries. I'd like a few words with Mr. Hendricks.
Please sit down, Mr. Vance and Sergeant Heath.
Thanks.
Now then, I'm at your service.
Well, Mr. Hendricks, I'm looking for one of your messengers in connection with the Getman murder. A guy called Tony Carpini.
Ah, so. Unfortunately, he is no longer in my employ.
You mean you fired him?
Yes, this morning. So you are looking for Tony, eh? I'm glad I got rid of him.
If I'm not too inquisitive, Mr. Hendricks, why did you dismiss him?
I did not trust the man.
And of course you had excellent reasons for not trusting him?
He had quite a temper. Just lately he was very surly. Not a man to trust with a gun.
A gun? Did he carry a gun?
My messengers often deliver valuable pieces. I believe I saw in the papers that the bullet was a .32.
Yeah, that's right.
You may be interested to know that Tony's gun was a .32. I have it here in my desk.
Well, well, right in your desk. Now, that's convenient, Mr. Hendricks.
He turned it in when I discharged him. There you are, Sergeant.
Thanks. I'll just take this along.
Where did Tony keep the gun? After work, I mean.
In his locker with his uniform.
I presume he had a key to the delivery entrance?
And he could get in at night if he wanted to?
Easily.
Well, thanks, Mr. Hendricks. Oh, say, before I go, my wife wants an extra chair for the living room, and I noticed that one by the door as we came in.
The sergeant sat in it, bounced in it, slumped in it, and finally decided he and the chair were soulmates. It's that carved chair with a needlepoint upholstery.
Of course, I know the chair.
How much are you asking for it?
It is priced at $575, I believe.
Holy cow, I can get the same thing at Ludwig Bauman's for $3175. Well, thanks again.
Not at all. Goodbye, gentlemen.
Goodbye.
All right. Now we're really getting somewhere. And without none of that fancy psychology of yours either, Mr. Vance. That guy Hendricks was pretty helpful.
Wasn't he, though? Almost too helpful. What's the news this morning, Markham? You look like the cat that swallowed the canary and went proudly around hiccuping feathers.
Well, Vance, Sergeant Heath's out tracking down our man now. I told him to bring him in as soon as he located him.
And who is the man?
I never thought I'd hear Philo Vance ask that question. You usually know who the man is.
So nice of you to say so, old fellow.
You know, Vance, a gun scratches its individual signature on bullets that leave the barrel. So we compared the bullet that killed Getman with a bullet fired from the gun that messenger, here it is. Tony Carpini. The bullets match perfectly. Looks like he did it.
My dear Markham, it only proves that a bullet fired from his gun brought about Getman's untimely demise.
Vance, you're splitting hairs.
Splitting hairs is a hobby of mine, Markham, old boy. A hobby that I thought I shared with all members of the legal profession.
Yes, Mr. Markham.
Send Miss Allen in.
Yes, sir.
Ah, that would be our femme fatale, the Cleopatra of Flushing. From Swacker's voice, I'd say she left him goggle-eyed.
Come in and sit down, Miss Allen.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm Mr. Markham, and this is Mr. Vance, a sort of special assistant of mine.
A pleasure, Miss Allen.
Likewise.
We'd like to have you tell us what happened the night of the murder.
Well, I had a date with Tony, and we drove around a little, and then we parked, and he started talking about me going out with Mr. Getman. He got sore, and I told him that we would have to consider our acquaintanceship at an end because I had become engaged to Mr. Getman. She had only been engaged 8 days. I didn't even get a ring.
And what was Tony's reaction to the news of your engagement?
He was wild. He was mad. He threatened to kill me and Paul. That's Mr. Getman. So I asked him to be so kind as to take me home.
Yes, what time was it he brought you home?
About 7:45. Oh, he did it all right, Mr. Markham.
Well, thank you very much, Miss Allen. Now,
just a moment, Markham. Miss Allen, how long have you been, dating Mr. Getman?
Oh, about 4 months, I guess. I met him when Tony had to deliver something to his shop to be repaired after hours, and he took me along. Paul fell in love with me at first sight. I'm considered very attractive by men.
Well, obviously. And you liked Mr. Getman very much, I presume.
Oh, indeed. Indeed, yes. I've always wished to travel, and he was going to take me to South America after the duration of the duration. Paul knew lots of important people, too, if you know what I mean.
I'm afraid I don't.
Well, like Mr. Howard, the art collector. Paul took me to one of Mr. Howard's cocktail parties. Gee, it was swell. Nobody was there who wasn't somebody.
Vance, don't you
just
think...
Just be patient a moment, Markham.
I even talked with Mr. Howard himself in person. Oh, he was swell. And he showed me some of his collection. You know, etchings and things. When I told him Tony worked for Mr. Hendricks, and I knew all about art from what Tony had told me...
I see. And you and Mr. Howard got along very well together?
Oh, sure. I told him all about Tony and I and Paul, and he laughed and laughed. I was a big hit at that party. Gee, I guess I'll never get to travel after what Tony done.
Oh, I imagine another man will come along and be blinded by your charms, Miss Allen.
Yeah, I suppose so, but maybe he won't be no gentleman like Mr. Getman.
Hey, will you stop shoving me around?
Tony!
Here's Carpini, Mr. Markham. He was out on the town last night, but I grabbed him when he came back to his room. Had his bags packed and was all ready to skip town.
Tony, what did you do it for? What did you do it for? You spoiled everything.
I didn't kill him.
You did, too. You said you were going to.
Shut up, will you?
I hate you. I'll never give you another date.
Will you shut up? I tell you, I didn't kill him. I didn't have nothing to do with it.
You did, too. You're a murderer. That's what you are, a murderer.
Cut it out, Carpini. Let go of me. It's her own fault. She started it.
Take him away, Sergeant.
Okay, Mr. Markham. I guess he's a man, all right. What'd they tell you, Mr. Vance? Church A Femme? Church A Femme? Come on, Carpini.
Oh, nuts.
Here, use my handkerchief, Miss Allen.
Oh, gee, thanks. You're awfully nice to me.
Not I, Miss Allen. Some other gentleman.
Well, Vance, are you convinced now?
Not entirely, Markham. So I think I'll trot along and see if I can comb a little information from George Henry Howard.
Are you going now?
Yes, Miss Allen, but before I depart, I think you may be interested to know that Mr. Markham is a bachelor and a very eligible gentleman.
Hmm?
Confidentially, he's fascinated by you.
No kidding. Why, Mr. Markham.
Vance, what's the idea?
Bye-bye, Markham.
Oh, sit down. Sit down, Mr. Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. A very pleasant den you have here.
Yes, I like it.
I see the cases along the walls are filled with the ripe fruit of your continental travels. Some beautiful things.
You like them, eh? Well, when I saw something I wanted, I got it. Of course, these cases represent only a fraction of my entire collection. Now, these two curved swords are nice. Creases, they're called. I picked them up in the Malay States 10 years ago. Sharp as razors.
And an exquisite pair of old dueling pistols. I suppose they are dueling pistols, aren't they?
Oh, yes, yes. I got them in France. Beautiful inlaid gold work on them. And you'll notice they're identical in weight, shape, trigger pull, everything. Had to be, you know, to make the duel fair.
Amazing. And I suppose these little cloth patches are for cleaning the guns.
That's right. That's quite right.
Well, what have we here in this case? It looks like a copy of that Cellini cup in the Metropolitan Museum.
Yes, it's a good copy, too.
Yes, it is. You have a whole case of ivory figurines, I see.
Mm-hmm. I collected them for a while. Only a few of them have any real value.
By the by, Mr. Howard, I came to ask about Hans Hendricks. You've had dealings with him, I suppose.
Oh, yes.
You see, Getman's murder is pretty well pinned on one of Hendricks' messengers. It was his gun. Please don't repeat this, but it occurred to me that Hendricks also might have access to that gun.
Oh, I see, I see.
Do you happen to know whether Hendricks and Getman got along all right together?
Well, as far as I know, of course, Hans is a shrewd Dutchman, and he's an art dealer, too.
I gather your opinion of the integrity of art dealers is not too frightfully high.
You never can tell, Mr. Vance. You never can tell.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Mr. Howard. You've been most helpful. Well, Tony, nice cell you have here.
Don't be funny.
Tony, I'd like to ask you a question or so.
Yeah? You trying to help me?
Yes.
What's your angle?
Well, Tony, I'm of the opinion that jail is an unhealthy place to be. If you answer a few questions, I may be able to help get you out.
Okay. What have I got to lose?
Did Mr. Hendricks know about your trouble with Miss Allen and Getman?
If he did, I didn't tell him. He might have found out from Getman, though.
That's right, too. Did Mr. Hendricks ever give you anything to deliver to Mr. Howard?
Yeah, a couple of times. And that Mr. Howard is a right guy.
And how did you come to that conclusion?
Well, you see, I delivered a vase about a week ago, and there was a party going on. Mr. Howard was pretty tight, and he spilled two drinks he was holding all over me.
Oh, Mr. Vance...
Just a moment, Sergeant. Go ahead, Tony.
Well, he took my clothes and gave me one of his silk bathrobes to wear and had my clothes dried while I sat in the room. Then he gave me $10. I thought that was okay.
Now, Sergeant?
I found out if Mr. Markham was in his office like he asked me to. He is all right.
Thanks very much, Sergeant. You're a noble custodian of the law. I'll be right. Go right up and see him. And thank you, Tony. Don't worry too much.
Vance, for heaven's sakes, what did you bring me here to the museum for?
Stop fretting, Markham. I wanted to lift you out of the hurly-burly of your mundane world, far from the madding crowds' ignoble strife, and to transport you to the cool halls of this temple of art.
Now, what sort of nonsense is that?
Once in a while, you've got to get away from jangling telephones, noisy courtrooms, and intellectuals such as the good Sergeant Heath. You've got to get away and enter this world of beauty and quiet and romance. Look at the Etruscan shield in this case, Markham.
Yeah, very nice.
What stories it could tell. How many heroes buckled it on and strode bravely into battle shouting some barbaric cry. Yet here it is today, still full of beauty. Ah, here's the Cellini cup. Remember, there was a copy of it in that case in Getman's shop. Benvenuto Cellini. Artist, writer, swordsman, adventurer, the gay lover of the Renaissance. And over here...
Now, Vance, you're not going to take me on a conducted tour of the Metropolitan Museum, are you? I've got work to do.
All right, Markham. I have a few things to do myself. But if you and Sergeant Heath will arrange under some pretext for Howard and Hendricks to be at the Old World Curio Shop 2 hours from now, I'll turn over the murder of Paul Getman to you at the conclusion of a short lecture.
While Philo Vance is preparing to expose the murderer of Paul Getman, may I take just a moment to speak about freshness and its importance in cigarettes? That's why Raleigh's are living in a brand new house. Raleigh's new house we speak about is a scientifically developed, highly protective inner lining that seals the Raleigh package. Protects Raleigh's more expensive, more golden tobaccos against flavor-stealing dryness. Preserves Raleigh's full, rich, satisfying flavor. This extra safeguard provides up to 400% more protection. Yes, Raleigh's goodness is sealed in because dryness is sealed out. And this extra protection ensures Raleigh's perfection. Next time, get America's fresher cigarette, Raleigh's. And now here's Philo Vance.
Well, Howard and Hendricks put in their appearance at the Old World Curio Shop on the dot of 8 with Markham and Sergeant Heath. Howard was his usual jovial self, but Hendricks was quiet, and it seemed to me a little suspicious. I had chairs arranged around a table, and seated Howard and Hendricks with their backs to the showcases. Markham tossed the conversational ball right into my lap.
Mr. Vance will explain this meeting to you, gentlemen.
Yes.
Well, you both have something you want to get out of this shop, and knowing how complicated the legal machinery that Mr. Markham so valiantly protects is, I persuaded him to settle the whole thing tonight and save both of you the inconvenience of waiting for Getman's fares to be settled. Mr. Hendricks, I believe there's something of yours here in the shop that Getman was repairing for you.
A large cloisonné elephant.
And, Mr. Howard, you wanted to buy the contents of one of these showcases, didn't you?
That's right, Mr. Vance. Getman and I had already agreed on a price of $4,000.
Which seems more than fair to me. It's amazing, isn't it, how a small piece of lead can complicate the lives of a lot of people? Tony Carpini didn't simplify matters for either of you.
Then he's the one who did it, huh?
That's right, Mr. Howard. Cha-cha, fam.
I didn't know I had a man like that working for me.
Funny, I always thought he was a nice boy.
Well, I don't agree with Sergeant Heath's cha-cha, fam theory, as he calls it. I think the motive was robbery. There was one item in this case that Tony might have thought represented a fortune in itself. Just a minute. It was this item right here. Look, a copy of the Cellini Cup. This is what lured a man to the depths of murder. But it never will again because I'm going to smash it to pieces on this table.
Don't do that. Don't, you fool. Stop. That's the real cup. That's the original. Stop it, you idiot. You're smashing one of the greatest treasures in the world.
Sergeant Heath, you may arrest Mr. Howard for the murder of Paul Getman. Well, Markham, the Admirable Curry has just informed me that he will serve dinner in 3 minutes.
Vance, you irritating so-and-so. Sit down and tell me how you knew Howard murdered Getman. His confession clears Tony, but there's still a lot of things unanswered.
Well, there's no point in my being coy with you, Markham. Where shall I begin? Why did Howard kill Getman? His confession explains that, but suppose I put it in order. A. Howard was a wealthy art collector who wanted something he couldn't buy. The Cellini Cup that was in the museum. B. Getman was a clever goldsmith who did repair work for the museum. He had access to the Cellini Cup. C. Howard bribed Getman to make a copy of the cup and substitute it for the original. But D. Getman made 2 copies, substituted one for the original, which he kept, and sent the other copy to Howard, who E. for exterminate, decided to kill him when he found he had been double-crossed, and did.
Yes, yes, Vance, I know all that, and it isn't necessary to talk to me as though I were a child.
Yeah, I'm not at all sure about that, Markham.
Oh, go on, go on. What about the bullet from Tony Carpini's gun, matching the one that killed Getman? Stop giving me the story in driblets.
Well, at that party Miss Allen went to, she mentioned to Howard that Tony had threatened to kill Getman, and Howard realized he had a perfect fall guy, shall we say. He ordered some items sent from Hendricks, and then Tony delivered it. Howard spilled the drinks on him. With the pretext of drying his clothes, Howard got hold of the gun, took it to the basement, fired several shots into something that wouldn't destroy the markings on the bullets, then cleaned the gun and replaced the empty shells.
Yes, but how did he shoot Getman with that bullet?
Oh, very simple. Howard owned a pair of muzzle-loading dueling pistols, and he loaded one of them with the bullet from the gun. Remember that charred piece of cloth that was near the body?
Yes.
That was used to tamp the powder down. And remember Sergeant Heath remarked about the hole the bullet made? That it was large, and he'd guessed the bullet was a .45? Well, the .32 bullet was a little small for the gun, and it wasn't going straight when it hit Getman.
Howard was an ingenious devil, wasn't he?
Come, come, Markham, don't give him all the applause. Save a little for me.
All right, you too are an ingenious devil. But what made you suspect Howard?
A number of things. First, my suspicions were aroused when he offered twice as much for the contents of that case containing the Cellini cup as they were worth. Then it seemed strange that a man of Howard's position would invite Getman and his lady love to one of his parties. Of course, though, they were partners in crime.
Yes, that seemed odd to me, too.
It bothered me, and I dropped in to chat with Howard about it. Saw the dueling pistols and the little cloth patches. And also discovered, to my surprise, that he already had a copy of the Cellini cup. Why should he want another?
So you took another look at the one in Getman's shop, found it was the original, and dragged me over to the museum where you saw a copy in place of the original.
Excellent. An astounding piece of deduction, Markham. I exchanged the cups with the full cooperation of 2 dazed directors of the museum, then pulled the psychological rabbit out of my hat.
But why did you have me bring Hendricks over here to the shop, too?
Well, there was a possibility that Getman might have gone to Hendricks with the cup, hoping to sell it to him and get some money in addition to what Howard had already given him. Who knows? Perhaps he did. And Hendricks had access to Tony's gun. But I was sure that a man who was willing to risk his life and reputation for that cup couldn't sit quietly and see it smashed in front of his eyes.
Vance, you're an amazing person.
I'm also hungry. Come, Markham. I see Curry signaling that dinner is served. I hope the chicken tetrazzini is good. Catching a murderer has given me quite an appetite.
Raleigh's cigarettes are protected in a way that no other cigarette is protected. Raleigh's live in a new house, a revolutionary new package that keeps them factory fresh. Raleigh's special package provides up to 400% greater protection than the package on all other leading brands against loss of freshness, loss of flavor. Why not smoke the cigarette you know is fresh? Raleigh's, America's freshest cigarette. Next week at this same time, the makers of Raleigh cigarettes will again present Philo Vance to tell you and your friends another exciting story. A story he calls The Mystery of the Singing Cat. The part of Philo Vance was played by John Emery. Tom Shirley speaking. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
When a man is wealthy, a widower without children, it's possible for some dishonest person to try and get his money away from him. When the widower lost his only child in a drowning some 9 years ago, the most logical way to get the money, since the body of the drowned child was never recovered, would be to pretend to be the dead girl. Hello, creeps. This is T4Y, opening the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. Tonight we celebrate the return of the master of them all, the inimitable Philo Vance. The story, the case of the girl who came back. About 10 minutes ago, in Philo Vance's apartment, the eminent detective has just finished luncheon. Alone. Now, however, he has a guest, and she's very much at home, even with his servant, Curry.
Lay out Mr. Vance's water wings, will you, Curry? We're going swimming.
We are not.
Mr. Vance.
Vance, really, it's a terrific day. I phoned Washington, and there isn't any detecting for me to do. Please take me swimming.
It's Coney Island, no doubt. Along with 7 million others who've got the same idea.
It'd be fun.
Mr. Vance.
It would be a nightmare. I loathe floundering about in water like a canned salmon. What is it, Terry?
You are a canned salmon.
This gentleman, Mr. Vance, remember, he's been waiting for you to finish lunch?
The one in the hall? He was sitting here when I came in.
Don't come in, Terry.
Yes, sir.
Wait a minute. What's his name?
Martin, Mr. Vance. John Martin.
Maybe he'll take me swimming.
Well, you can dream, can't you? Mr. Martin? Mr. Martin, come in, please.
Thank you. You're Mr. Philo Vance?
I am. This is Miss Randall, my swimming instructor.
I beg your pardon?
How do you do, Mr. Martin?
You're probably wondering why I'm here, Mr. Vance. I just had to come to you. This thing is so unbelievable, so fantastic.
Let's hear it, Mr. Martin.
I beg your pardon?
Miss Randall, I ought to say, is a detective, Mr. Martin. In manner of speaking.
Oh, I see.
Thanks for the manner of speaking.
Don't mention it. Just what is your story, Mr. Martin? Perhaps I can suggest someone who'll be glad to help.
It's horrible, Mr. Vance. You see, I live out on Long Island, Great Neck, Long Island. I have a home there on the water.
I know the section.
I'm alone now. My wife died 6 years ago.
I see.
You may remember, it was in the papers. Our only child was drowned on our beach when she was 11.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a great tragedy, Miss Randall. Mrs. Martin never really got over it.
Oh, then this wasn't recent.
Oh, no. No, Jean was drowned 9 years ago, Mr. Vance.
1936.
Yes, that's right. My wife died 3 years later. The child and I were swimming together. I can remember it so plainly. She ventured out too far while I was on shore, and she was caught in a riptide.
How horrible.
I heard her scream, but I couldn't reach her. I saw her body carried out to sea, Mr. Vance. I saw it myself.
It was recovered?
Never. No, from that day to this, her body was never found. Oh, I spent thousands, Mr. Vance, just to give her poor mother that much peace of mind. But her body was never washed in.
Well, I am sorry, Mr. Martin. I can understand a tragedy like that. But I don't quite see...
Yesterday, Mr. Vance, Jean came home.
What?
Yes, I didn't quite get that myself.
This girl, this fraud, Mr. Vance, this cunning little imposter, she came to my home yesterday and tried to tell me she's my own daughter.
What in the...
But, Mr. Martin, surely you can tell.
Why, of course I can tell. She's a scheming little cheat, Mr. Vance. She's no more my Jean than this lady is.
Hardly see that it's anything to worry about, Mr. Martin. Why not phone the police?
I wanted to at once. But my law firm bears my name, you see. Unpleasant publicity of that sort, notoriety. No, I owe it to my associates to keep it out of the papers.
But obviously, if the girl is an imposter, you can make short work of her. Trip her up on some simple little reference to her past, to her mother. It seems easy, Mr. Martin.
That's just it. This girl knows more about me than I do myself. Terrifying, Mr. Vance. She knows the house, the grounds, the countryside. And she swears she's my daughter.
I don't mean to be simple, but where does she say she's been all this time?
Oh, she has a story for that, too. Says that she was washed up on shore, a complete victim of amnesia.
Oh.
Yes, the gall of it. Tried to tell me she's been without memory for 9 years and came out of it this week in a fall down the stairs.
She sounds clever.
You don't recognize her, of course.
I'm sure she's not my daughter, Mr. Vance. Definitely sure.
Well, she would change, naturally. She was 11 when she was drowned, 20 now. Yes, she changed a great deal.
Oh, not that much, Vance.
Yet you say she seems well acquainted with her alleged home, Mr. Martin.
It's amazing. That's why I can't call the police. Her story is just convincing enough. They'd drag it through the papers for weeks.
She's working with someone, of course. Someone who's told her the right answers. Right, Vance?
You know, I'd like to meet a girl who would plan a game like this. I really would.
Then you'll help me, Mr. Vance. You'll expose her.
Still sold on that swim lane?
Now? Oh, not while you cavort with a 20-year-old ghost, darling. I'll stick with you.
And this brings us back to the library, Mr. Vance. Now you've seen the whole estate.
Well, I see you're a camera enthusiast, Miss Martin.
Huh? Oh, those enlargements. Yes, I dabble in it. When the war broke out, my doctors told me to do something to quiet my nerves, so I pick up photography.
Some of these are excellent.
I have a dark room downstairs. I'll open it up if you like.
I'd enjoy it. And now if you'll send the young lady in, please.
I'll tell you how grateful I am, Mr. Vance. I'm in a terrible strain. Mr. Vance wants to see you.
What about?
Come in, Miss...
Miss Martin. Jean Martin.
Yes, so we've heard. Sit down, Miss... Miss Martin. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask you a few questions.
I suppose he hired you.
On the contrary, I should have paid to meet you. I admire your courage.
You're very funny.
You contend you've been an amnesia victim for 9 years. Is that right?
That's right. But surely you know where you've been. I remember falling. I must have hit my head because there's a bump on it. And that's all.
That's all?
When I came to, I was about a block from here. That was last night.
You mean you don't know where you've been for 9 years?
You heard me.
Oh, your language, chum. Doesn't quite go with the detour around here.
Okay, so maybe the last 9 years weren't so good. How do I know?
Well, that lane puts you in the well-known place.
Listen, mister, I'm Gene Martin, and you and nobody else can prove any different. So let's get down to terms.
Terms? What kind of terms?
Oh, he didn't tell you that, huh? Well, listen, my grandfather was stinking rich. He was lousy with it, see? And it all came to me. Only my father was to get it if I died.
And now you'll come back for the money that's rightfully yours. Is that it?
You think I'm going to let him keep it? He won't even listen to me.
Imagine being so mean.
You keep out of this.
Careful, girls. You did miss up on one small detail, you know. Jean Martin had a scar on her right wrist. A rather prominent scar. And you haven't.
A scar can heal, can't it? I had the scar. It's gone now. It's been gone for years.
Oh, brother, you're really good.
Listen, you...
Wait a minute. Keep talking, Lane.
What?
There's someone listening at the door. Say anything.
Oh, I know what I'd like to say. A nice afternoon like this, and we come all the way out here to...
Care to join us?
Come in.
Hey, let go of me.
Gladly. And who, might I ask, are you?
A long-lost brother, no doubt.
Well?
I work here. I'm the chauffeur.
That's right, he is. Bill and I used to play together when we were kids.
Would you say that slowly, honey? I'm a little sick today.
His father worked here for us before. Bill was brought up on the estate. We used to play together all the time.
That right, Bill?
I never saw her before in my life.
Why, you...
But you did live here. You did play with the real Jean Martin.
Sure. She was a great little kid. I taught her to swim.
You remember a scar on her wrist, of course?
Sure I do. Right here. About an inch and a half. She got it cutting a watermelon at a picnic out on the lawn. Heck, I went with her when my dad drove her into town to the doctor.
I see. Well, you've been a great help, Bill. You'll be around if I need you again.
Yeah. I'll be around.
Thank you.
Listen, he's lying, I tell you. He remembers me. He must.
Sure, honey. We all do.
Will you ask your papa to come in here, Jean?
Listen, you can stop cracking, both of you, because I'm Jean Martin, brother, and that's it.
Ask him to come in, please.
Sure. Go ahead. Play detective all you like. Hey, Daddy.
You're through, Mr. Vance?
Well, it wasn't much effort, Mr. Martin. The local police could have handled the situation nicely. Let's all sit down a moment.
Sure, I got all the time in the world.
You scheming little...
Take it easy, Daddy.
On the way out here, young lady, Mr. Martin explained that you're unusually well acquainted with this house. In short, that you can answer questions an outsider wouldn't know.
I told you I used to live here. Remember?
You knew, for instance, that your mother played the piano. That the rose garden was once to the north, rather than where it is now. That the roof on the east wing is new.
Yes, there was a great deal more, Mr. Vance. It's uncanny.
Well, obviously the girl's been well coached. Is Bill in on the deal, Jean?
What? My chauffeur, Bill?
We've met him, Mr. Martin.
Why, that's absurd. I've practically raised the boy myself. His father died right here in my employ.
Try again, Mr. Detective.
Suppose we try money, Jean. That interest you?
Sure it does. If the money belongs to me. Don't forget I'm Jean Martin.
You know, Mr. Martin, the girl might be telling the truth.
Oh,
Vance. Why, that's ridiculous, Mr. Vance. I'm surprised you mentioned such a thing.
Stranger things have happened, you know. And the girl is right. Childhood scars do disappear in time.
But for
her amnesia, that's entirely possible, too.
Now you're doing okay.
Vance, what in the...
My suggestion, Mr. Martin, is that we settle this some way now. Right here in this room.
I think I'll have a drink.
Well, perhaps that would help us all. Lane?
You sound like you've had 10, Vance. Why, anything.
Later, pets. When we're alone.
There's only scotch here in the library, if you...
Well, that'll do nicely, thanks.
Let me pour the drink. I'm the daughter, you know. You want one, too?
Oh, I might as well. I feel it already.
Here you are, Mr. Vance.
Ah, thank you. Now then, let's drink to the success of our bargaining. How's that? To the success of what we'll accomplish here.
Mr. Vance, wait.
What, Miss Martin?
Vance, no, don't drink that. It's poison, Vance. That glass is full of poison.
Vance!
Well, I seem to have spilled my drink.
Vance, you didn't drink it.
Thanks, Mr. Martin. No.
Well, I'm sorry I had to knock it out of your hand, Mr. Vance. You devil.
Why, listen.
Smell that, Mr. Vance. Why, I know that odor anywhere. It's the emulsion I use in my dark room downstairs. You little fiend. You knew I kept chemicals in there. Then, when Mr. Vance was going to expose you, you decided to poison him.
Good Lord.
I am grateful to you, Mr. Martin. It seems I almost drank a developer highball.
You're off the beam, all of you. Why,
You keep quiet. I've had enough out of you. Well, Mr. Vance, shall I call the police?
It won't be necessary, Mr. Martin. Miss Randall and I are driving into town. We'll take our young friend with us.
Why, you chump.
Oh, and I'd like to take Bill, too, Mr. Martin. I'm not entirely sure he isn't mixed up in this.
Take them all. I just want this woman out of my house.
I assure you, Mr. Marden, you've seen the last of her.
Want me to stay in here, Mr. Vance? I mean, with all this?
No, I think not, Curry. I'll call if I need you.
Yes.
Oh, Vance, dear.
Yes, Lane?
Is it fair if I ask just one little question?
Ooh, by all means.
What in the name of what are we doing here in your apartment? Let's take these two down to the district attorney's office and be done with it.
Look, Mr. Vance, you got me all wrong. I never saw this dame before until last night.
Oh, yes, you did, Billy. Yes, you did.
All right, kids. I think the show's gone far enough. You can take that layer of skin off your wrist, Jean.
Vance, what in the world
is... This is what I mean, Jean. Let me have your wrist a moment.
Get away from her.
It's all right, Bill. I'm quite convinced she is Jean Martin. See? Just an ordinary skin patch, isn't it, Jean? And very neatly applied, too.
She's got the scar.
She has. Miss Martin, Miss Randall.
How do you do? You win, Mr. Vance.
You found her, of course, Bill?
Yes, sir. I never gave up looking for Jean.
The amnesia story is true, then?
Quite true, Mr. Vance. I came to on the beach about 6 miles from our house. On the day I was supposed to be drowned, I mean. I was 11 years old.
The doctors figured a wave threw her up against a log or something in the water, Mr. Vance. Her head was cut.
And then, Jean?
Well, I couldn't remember anything, Mr. Vance. For days I'd walked around in a kind of a dream, and then finally I was taken to the Good Shepherd Orphanage. Well, you can phone them and check if you like. I've been working there for my boarding room.
Go on.
Well, just as Bill said, he's always looked for me. He never believed I was drowned.
I couldn't afford to hire detectives or advertise, Mr. Vance, especially working right there in the Martin home. I'd just ask questions and write letters. Then when a reply sounded worthwhile, well, I'd investigate in my time off.
And one letter came to the Good Shepherd asking about an amnesia case in 1936. And so they told Bill about me. Bill came up to see me and... Well, here we are.
I see. Well, that clears up a great deal.
Vance, you're out of your mind. Why, those two are bigger phonies than I thought.
Why, Lane?
Well, for one thing, why did our hero here keep all this from the girl's father? Why not let him spend his money looking for his own daughter?
He thought she was dead.
Oh, and you knew better, I suppose.
Mr. Martin was careful that there was almost no publicity at the time of the drowning, Miss Randall. Just a little too careful. Why did he want to keep it quiet when the body wasn't found?
Okay, we'll skip that for a minute. Suppose you are Jean Martin. Why the mystery? Why cover up the one scar that proves it? Why play the tough little mall with us all afternoon? And you, Bill, you pretended you didn't even know her. What goes on here?
Fair question, Lane. Going to answer, Jean?
Well, you're convinced that I am Jean Martin, Mr. Vance.
Beyond a doubt, Jean, even without the scar. I knew it before we left your home.
All right, then I'll tell you. My father tried to murder me. What? Yes, I know that sounds strange, but that's true. I wasn't carried away by the tide that day. And he wasn't on the shore, as he said.
He held her head underwater, Mr. Vance. Held her and pushed her out to sea.
And when I got back, I knew if I proved I was Jean right away, he'd try to murder me again. And if I went to the police, he'd call me an imposter. He'd even lie about my scar. So the only thing to do was to throw him off his guard by convincing him that I was a fake.
You see, we hoped we could find a way to trick him into admitting he tried to kill her. We planned it together, Mr. Vance. And when Mr. Martin called you in, we didn't know what to do.
You see, Lane?
Oh, just skip me, Vance. I'm so dizzy now, just let me sit here and spin.
Well, it's quite simple, really. Martin called me in to bolster his own case. Now I think we'll unbolster it a little.
But how, Mr. Vance? What can we do now? He's got all Jean's money, everything.
Jean, I told you once today you've got nerve. Think you can use it again?
I can try, Mr. Vance.
Good. Now, here's exactly what I want you to do.
Mr. Martin, sir.
Yes, Bill?
That boat's loose again, sir. I'm afraid it's been damaged hitting against the dock.
Confound it. Can't you keep that boat tied up properly?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Martin. I wasn't here this afternoon, you know.
Oh, yes, that's true. I'm glad you came out clean in that nasty mess, Bill.
Mr. Vance called and told me the police are convinced that you had nothing to do with that girl.
Yes, sir.
Well, we'll just forget the whole incident, son. Boat damaged, you say?
Yes, sir. I wish you'd go down and look for yourself, Mr. Martin, and you can tell me what's to be done.
All right, I will. Nice night like this, I ought to be outside. Yes, go along, son. I'll look at it directly.
Yes, sir. I'll be in my quarters if you want me.
Thank you, Bill. Beautiful night. Really beautiful. I ought to get the camera. Moon like that, I might get a good shot without a light at all. Good boy, Bill. Comes of good solid stock. Well, I just told him to turn on the floodlights down here. How does he think I can inspect the boat without lights? Yeah. My, what a wonderful night. What? I could have sworn I... That song. Jane!
Recognize the song, Daddy. From Lullaby. Lullaby. And good night.
I must be asleep. Stop that. Stop that singing.
You used to sing it to me when I was a little girl. You and Mother would come into my room at night, and you'd sing it to me. Remember, Daddy?
Stop it, I say! Who are you?
Look at my wrist. See the scar on my wrist? The scar I got cutting the melon on the lawn? You remember, Daddy. Mother was there. Aunt Ada was there. Remember?
Jane.
I was 10 when I got that scar. And when I was 11...
Shut up! Shut up, I say!
When I was 11, we went swimming one afternoon right here, Daddy, right here at this pier. You remember the day I knew, don't you?
You
let me hold onto your back while we swam way out, Daddy. Way out where the water's deep and cold. And then you took hold of my neck, remember? You held me and you pushed me down, down into the water. Remember how I tried to scream? Remember how I felt struggling in your arms? You
didn't die. You
tried to murder me in this water. You held me down until you thought I was dead. But I didn't drown, Daddy. You see, I'm here now. I'm right here in front of you.
You fool. You think you could come back now? Did you think I'd let you come back after all I did? That money's mine and it's going to stay mine. I thought I murdered you once. This time I'll do it right.
Stop.
Oh, still you little fool. Oh, same water, is it? Well, you'll see, you little idiot.
And don't move, please. I have a gun.
Ben, where'd you come from?
From under the pier, in a word. Oh, Bill, light, please.
Right, Mr. Vance.
Ben, did it work?
Beautifully, Lane. He tried to drown her just as I said he would. You all right, Jean? Get up on the pier, Martin. Watch him, Bill. I'll help Jean.
Jean, darling. It worked. I heard the whole thing.
Yes, it worked.
You take this revolver, please, and escort Mr. Martin up to my car. You'll find Curry and some officers waiting.
Yes, sir. Come on, Martin. This is the end of the line.
Well, do you by any chance have a spare towel, Lane? The bottom rung of that ladder down there was just a little wet.
Bam, tell me something before I bust.
Burst.
Oh, don't be stuffy. Why were you sure Jean was Jean? Because you saw the fake scar tissue on her wrist?
Well, that helped, Lane. But I wasn't sure until Martin tried to make it look as if she'd poisoned my drink.
But...
Elementary, as that man would say. Martin told me he installed his photographic room after the market crash in 1939. Remember?
Yes, of course, but I still don't...
But, darling. When he turned on Jean and accused her of stealing chemicals from it for my drink, he said she knew the darkroom was there. Well, now, she couldn't have if she were his daughter. He drowned her 3 years before it was put in, and if she was a phony... She was too well-coached to betray herself that way. And finally, Pet, the dark room was locked. Martin said as much himself.
You know, Vance, in a way, you're rather hot stuff.
Cold and wet at the moment. Well, give me that towel. Oh, what's so funny?
Oh, nothing. I was just thinking, you really got that swim after all.
case of the girl who came back. Now it's getting early again. This is T4Y, closing the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. Oh, yes. I almost forgot. Good night. Sleep tight. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.